There are people alive today who remember when a simple blister or sore throat could lead to death. Thanks to Louis Pasteur, Joseph Lister, and other doctors and scientists, men and women knew about bacteria and germs since the 1870s. But until about 75 years ago, doctors didn't know how to stop them. Cuts, colds, and wounds were all potentially lethal. Thomas Hager's new book, The Demon Under the Microscope, tells the story of how sulfa drugs were developed in the Germany of the 1930s, a corporation whose executives would later be put on trial for war crimes, developed the first antibiotics, a class of drugs that would save millions of lives around the world and change the whole practice of medicine. They were the world's first miracle drug. Thomas Hager joins us now from Eugene, Oregon. Mr. Hager, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And it's fascinating to learn in your book that as late as the 1920s, there were only about a dozen drugs that reliably worked. Drugs weren't part of medical care.
It's difficult to think now in terms of what our grandparents and great-grandparents experienced when they were growing up. In those days, before 1931-32, every year in America, huge epidemics swept through American cities, carried away tens of thousands of people. There was really nothing that anyone could do until the discovery of these drugs.
Explain to us how the development of sulfa drugs really came out of the catastrophic losses of World War I, and not just combat deaths, but battlefield deaths in which bacteria were responsible.
The man who discovered these drugs, the man who made these breakthroughs in medicine, was a German soldier in World War I, Gerhard Domack. He was wounded in the war and sent into the medical service to be an aide in a little farmhouse hospital out in the middle of the woods in the Ukraine, where German soldiers were brought in, truck after truck after truck of wounded German soldiers. The surgeons, working under terrible conditions, did fabulous work sewing up these torn apart men. And then Domack and the surgeons would watch as a week later, in case after case, an infection would set in. The wound would get infected. There was nothing that could be done for a wound infection. Dozens and dozens of men died before his eyes and the eyes of the physicians there, and hundreds of thousands died worldwide from wound infections. And the problem was, of course, that despite what you did in terms of cutting and sewing, there was nothing you could do to stop bacteria from infecting a wound and killing the soldiers.
How is it that the discovery of sulfa drugs was rooted in dyes, D-Y-E-S?
Dyes were really a terrifically important factor in the advance of chemistry 100 years ago. One of the ways in which dyes were important was not just to stain clothes, but for the study of bacteria as well. Bacteria under a microscope are almost impossible to see because they're transparent. So primarily Germans figured out that you could use these synthetic dyes to stain the bacteria a different color than the background, and you could see what bacteria were doing. Then they figured that if you can use a dye to stain a bacteria, well, maybe you might be able to attach a poison to the dye and poison the bacteria. And that was what they were looking for when they found the miracle drug, sulfa. Domack had been looking for a dye to cure disease at Bayer for 4 years, testing hundreds and hundreds of dye molecules without a single success. When in 1932 he was given a new dye molecule, the chemists had given him one that had a tiny little side chain attached to it that they hoped might make the dye stick better to the bacteria. When he tested that dye molecule, it suddenly worked. The little side chain somehow cured disease and had been sitting on the shelves of chemists in the dye-making industry for 20 or 30 years by the bagful. It was called sulfanilamide, and that was what kicked off this boom. The ironic thing, of course, is that sulfa is not a dye at all.
And in fact, there were two British scientists who established that, I think your nice phrase is, it wasn't a magic bullet, but a clever imposter.
It was. No one could figure out how it worked until some years later when British researchers figured out that it mimicked a food substance for bacteria. Bacteria would eat this synthetic chemical instead of the food they needed, and essentially they would starve to death.
When sulfa drugs were developed, they sure moved around the world quickly, didn't they? And we think that sort of thing can only be done now, but this was an extraordinary testament to industry.
Yes, and to marketing, and to the thirst that the public had for a medicine that would actually work. Mm-hmm. This medicine, sulfa drugs, could snatch patients back from the brink of the grave. The wonderment that you read in news accounts of the period is incredible. And starting with the discovery of the sulfa drugs in 35 and going 20 years till the middle of the 1950s, the mortality from childhood diseases worldwide went down by 90%. And the average lifespan for Americans increased by more than 10 years. So demographers call this the great mortality transition. And that's a very important turning point in human history. That started with the discovery of these drugs.
Could I ask you more about Gerhard Domek? He was not a Nazi. He's not a member of the party. And in fact, he refused to return the Heil Hitler salute. And yet he worked for a company that used slave labor.
He did his work within an organization, the Bayer Company, that became part of IG Farben, a giant German chemical combine that is infamous for using slave labor and for making the Zyklon gas that was used in the gas chambers at Auschwitz. Mm-hmm. Well, Domek did what I think many Germans did at that time. He focused entirely on his work, hoping that the good that he would do in the world would outweigh whatever politically was going on. When he won the Nobel Prize in Germany at that time, but
now,
the significance—
this was 1939.
He was hoping that he could accept it, but instead the Gestapo came to his door and arrested him and threw him in jail for a week.
For a drug that changed so much in the course of history, sulfa drugs had an astonishingly small window.
They did. This spurred more research into this field of magic bullet medicines like sulfa. People returned to penicillin, which they had sort of given up on, and pretty soon we had penicillin, then there was streptomycin, and we were in the middle of what's called the antibiotic revolution. And as these new antibiotics came on the scene, everyone forgot about sulfa. It had about a 10-year run.
Hmm. Sulfa is still used, though, isn't it? Because there are some people that just don't respond to penicillin.
It is indeed. Sulfa became sort of a less used antibiotic among 100-plus antibiotics that are available today. Now, they're finding that a lot of bacteria are resistant to almost all antibiotics. In a lot of cases, we're going back to sulfa now as a last line of defense when nothing else works. People get very enthused about antibiotics mm-hmm. and tend to overuse them because they seem so unbeatable. They're such a terrific advance.
Yeah.
We live in this golden age now where we have an ability to shrug off diseases that our grandparents and great-grandparents would have been scared silly of. Yeah. And it's important to realize the danger of antibiotic resistance now is growing so fast that I'm beginning to worry that we're nearing the end of that golden age.
Mr. Hager, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thomas Hager, his new book is The Demon Under the Microscope.